First, he'd aided Viper as she usurped the Dragon Throne. Then he'd betrayed her and helped them retake the Empire, only to help Viper issue a lawful challenge, the very same that cost Raven her life. And now he's here. Whisper wanted nothing more than to stand, descend the steps and stab him through the heart. But she didn't, because she was Empress now. What would Raven do? She asked herself. Gather information. Understand the facts. What treason have you committed? She asked, her voice cold-sounding even to her. The man looked up, tendrils of hair falling across his face. I helped Viper Sands usurp the throne. And my sister pardoned you for that crime after you helped us retake it. What else? I threatened the Empress before you, Raven Sands. Whisper wanted it to be true, but it simply wasn't. That was no threat. Viper used Calypsian law to her benefit. You helped her. That is no crime. I will kill you. The words seemed to come with great difficulty, and Whisper narrowed her eyes. Several of her guards began to draw their weapons, murmuring, He threatened the Empress's life. A false threat under the circumstances, she said. You are weaponless, in chains, surrounded by my guards.
I'll kill you!
Gat screamed, spit flying from his lips. He lowered his voice, and it took on a more menacing tone. Unless you kill me first, I will kill you. I swear it. I swear it on all the gods of old, on the very life of your sister. There were too many witnesses, and anyway, why shouldn't Whisper give this man the swift death he wanted? If not for him, Raven might still be alive. And yet, something gave Whisper pause. Her sister hadn't wanted to punish this man. At the time, Whisper hadn't understood it, but now, she thought, maybe she did. He'd been sent to Zoon just like them. The fighting pits changed a person. That much Whisper knew. So she did something mad, something that in the moment surprised even her. I pardon you, she said. All around the prisoner, the guards frowned, several of their mouths dropping open. What? Gat said, his shadowed eyes never leaving hers. You can't do that.
I am the Empress now, so yes, I can.
Why?
Because I need you to do something more productive than die. I need you to fight for me. Can you do that?
She could see the surprise on his face. More than that, she could see the relief, lighting him up like a lit torch.
He didn't truly want to die, she thought. He was doing it because he thought it was the honorable thing.
Yes, he whispered. I will fight for you. I will fight for Raven. I will fight for Calypso.
Good. Guards, outfit him with armor and weaponry. Gatvade will join the army as it marches to the border. From this moment forward, no one leaves or enters Calip without my express command. Is that clear?
As each guard assented, Whisper thought, We are an island in a tumultuous sea, but we shall not sink. 63. The Southern Empire, Calypso. Gwendolyn Storm. The Nub was growing. Not 3 days had gone by since Raven's death, and already the Nub was as long as Gwen's forearm, the skin rough but soft, not yet having developed scales.
Ciri,
Gwen said, trying to coax the dragon from sleep. The dragon stirred but did not awaken, her tail curled around Gwen, who had to be careful not to impale herself on the spikes. She tried again.
Ciri.
This time, one of the dragon's eyes opened, immediately locking on her. It was something she still hadn't quite gotten used to, how quickly a dragon shifted from the fog of sleep to complete awareness.
My soul, the dragon said.
Yes, I am. I am yours.
Gwen had repeated these same words often over the last couple days, trying to overcome the confusion that continued to cloud the dragon's mind.
I have nothing for you,
the dragon said.
You do,
Gwen said. It's not as much as you had before,
but I can feel your soul. It is mine. You gave it to me freely."
"I did?"
Gwen's lip trembled. She could feel the tether to this magnificent beast strengthening with each passing day, and now it broke her heart to sense the hole in Ciri's soul. She knew she had to stop the dragon from crossing the bridge over the chasm that led to madness. But how?
"Yes. You gave me all you had left. Can't you feel our bond?"
"No. But..."
"But what, my soul?"
"But there is something. In the distance. A great darkness. It calls to me. I would like to explore it."
Gwen's heart hammered.
"That is not a good place," she said. "You should not go there. Not now. Maybe later, but not now."
"Then why have my kin gone there? Why do they call to me?"
"They don't understand."
The dragon said nothing for a time, her leathery black wings shifting to cover her body more fully, as if she was cold. Then she said,
"I won't go to the darkness. Not yet."
"That's good. I am your soul, and you are mine."
"I am?"
Gwen wasn't certain Ciri was ready for this, but she also knew she might never be. Plus, with the Horde potentially marching deeper and deeper into the Four Kingdoms, time was of the essence. So she whispered soothingly into Ciri's ear as they descended in long, slow circles.
"This is a safe place. No one will harm you. You are with your soul."
Though Gwen continued to sense the confusion clouding the dragon's mind, at least she hadn't spoken of the dark place in more than a day, and the second neck had stopped growing. The dragon swooped lower and lower. The Calypsians had already stopped what they were doing to stare and point. Some of them ran for shelter. They had all heard the stories of what dragons were capable of when they went mad. Gwen couldn't blame them.
"Make for the palace courtyard," Gwen said. "There is safety behind the walls. It will be quieter there."
"I have been to this place,"
Ciri asked, sniffing the air.
"Many times. You belong here."
"Belong?"
She repeated the word as if it was new to her.
"Yes. I promise."
"I trust you."
How did Raven know?
Gwen wondered.
Why did she trust me with the most valuable thing in her life? Am I worthy of her trust?
"Raven. That name."
Gwen was still getting used to the fact that the dragon could read her every thought. She'd have to be more careful. But she also wouldn't hide the past from her. She deserved better than that.
"Yes. She was your soul before me."
"Dragons only have one soul."
"Usually," Gwen admitted. "But you are special."
She felt energy thrum through the dragon scales beneath her. Warmth flooded Gwen's chest. It was the first time Ciri had purred since... Guards poured into the courtyard just as Ciri landed, lowering her head so Gwen could slide off. A line of archers stood on the wall, arrows already nocked and aimed. The guards drew swords and scimitars. Ciri growled, her deadly tail flicking from side to side.
"Stay calm," Gwen told Ciri.
Whisper emerged from the throne room's rear door. She passed through her lines of guards without pausing. She only stopped when nothing separated them. Gwen noticed the way her eyes flicked from Gwen to the dragon's second neck and back again.
"I told you to depart these lands. You have risked much bringing her here," the Empress said.
"She's not mad," Gwen said.
"Not yet. But she will descend, as they always do. And when she does..."
I think I remember you," the dragon said.
Whisper flinched, and Gwen almost smiled.
"Good girl." "I don't understand," Whisper said. "She destroyed the pyramid. I saw her drop you from a great height."
"You also saw her catch me."
"True, but still. The dragons don't return from that dark place. It's impossible."
Gwen didn't know enough to know whether that was true, but she did know Ciri wasn't like other dragons.
Ciri is strong. She resisted the pull of the darkness. She didn't have to come back because she never left. Not fully.
You helped her?
Gwen nodded. I did what I could, but it was her decision to make.
But she's growing another.
The growth has stopped, Gwen said.
For now.
Speak to her, not me.
I don't know what to say.
The truth as you know it. Tell her what is in your heart.
Not out loud. In here.
Gwen gestured to her chest. Whisper swallowed, but nodded. Gwen forced her mind away from Ciri's. This wasn't her conversation to listen to. The dragon's tail stopped flicking. She became deadly still, almost as if she was a statue. But then she roared, fire roiling from her dark lips. The guards tensed, and one of the archers lost his nerve, his bowstring twanging as an arrow was released. Ciri's tail slapped at the air, knocking it away. She growled again at the archer. Whisper shouted, "Hold your fire!" Gwen's entire body was tensed, and she was ready to spring onto Ciri's back and command her to fly.
"Be at peace," she urged,
hoping Ciri could hear her. Ciri roared again, stalking one step closer to the wall, where the foolish archer was fumbling for another arrow.
"My soul," Gwen said. "It was a mistake. He didn't know what he was doing."
"Tries to hurt us. Must defend ourselves."
"No, not here. We are safe here."
"Lies.
Listen to the Empress. She controls these soldiers. She is the truth."
"She is full of lies, too."
The situation suddenly felt balanced on the tip of a knife, and Gwen couldn't be certain which way it would fall. She glanced at Whisper, wondering what she had said to the dragon.
"Order your soldiers to leave," Gwen said.
Whisper looked at her like she was the one growing a second head.
"Please," Gwen said. "Otherwise all might be lost." "My sister trusted you," Whisper said. "I will honor that trust. Do not abuse it, or I shall have to kill you with my own hands."
Ciri growled again, but Gwen held up a hand and she stopped.
"Fair enough. But if I betray your trust, I will slit my own throat to save you the trouble."
Whisper offered a grim smile and then said,
"Soldiers, leave us. That is a command."
Though it was clear it went against their better judgment, the soldiers were well trained and marched away, leaving both the courtyard and walls empty, save for the Empress, the dragon, and her soul.
"What is it you want from me?"
Whisper asked, when they were alone.
"We want you to fight. If the Horde enters our lands, we will stand against that."
"No," Gwen said.
"We want you to meet them in battle beyond your borders. We want you to fight alongside the other kingdoms with a dragon at your head. Will you do this thing? Will you honor your sister by carrying her work forward?"
Whisper locked eyes with her.
"No."
64. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Bane Garrick. He'd saved Night's End for last, because it was a place filled with screams and blood in his memory. A place where he knew he'd gone over the edge, finding joy in the killing, in the spilling of blood, regardless of the righteous intent that lay behind it all. He'd already travelled much of the Four Kingdoms in the span of a few hours. First, he'd watched as Raven Sand's body was burned to ash by her own dragon.
"One,"
he'd thought, wondering who the other would be. Then he'd shifted northward to Darin, which lay in ruin, deserted and spattered in blood. It was in the frozen north that he'd felt his chest tighten. It had felt like someone was squeezing his very heart, trying to pop it. He'd gasped and flopped on the ground, and eventually the feeling had passed. It was probably just the stress of all that had happened. He tried not to think about it, instead refocusing on his search. Next he'd visited the iron city of Feria, but most of the legionnaires were gone, along with Gareth Ironclad. Not dead, just gone. Now, as he looked upon Night's End, the city's destruction was complete. None survived, save the crows. So much death. And though Bane had killed many times before, his was for the greater good, or so he'd always believed. This, however, was mindless, purposeless. Death for the sake of death. Half-chewed carrion left to rot or be picked apart by dark scavengers.
I can stop this, he thought. I can save them all.
But finally, finally, he had a partner in all this. We're two sides of the same coin, dark and light, death and life. Together we can end this. Only together. But Bane had hurt so many. He knew he'd done it for the right reasons, but it didn't stop him from wondering whether what he'd done had been right. Have I done any good in this world? He wasn't certain. And if he hadn't, this was an opportunity to change all that. But he knew what Roan would say. We have to do this together. But Bane didn't want anyone else to die. After all, the original prophecy promised the deaths of 8 rulers, a prophecy that was now fulfilled. The 2 additional portions of his death mark came later. Perhaps they were only suggestions. Perhaps he could save those 2 lives. And why couldn't he save rather than kill? He held the very power over death in the marking that burned on his scalp. Yes, he thought, full of purpose once more. He would find the Horde. He would find their leader, and he would kill him. Then he would kill them all to save the rest.
65. The Southern Empire, Fenir. Roan Loren.
Everything was so messed up. Bane hadn't returned with information, so Roan didn't know who was dead and who was alive. Shay and Eric had almost destroyed all the Fate Marked, including themselves. Shanti Parthena Lord had nearly buried them in the rubble from a mass explosion narrowly thwarted by Falcon Hoser. And Rhea? Rhea had a daughter marked with peace, only they couldn't even explore what power the mark might offer to save the 4 kingdoms. Speaking of Rhea, she was back in full form. That bitch almost killed us all. She almost killed my daughter.
Rhea held Nora against her chest protectively.
Nora screamed when she heard the explosion.
Roan knew the real reason for the child's scream, and it broke his heart. He glanced at Lisbeth and Sir Dietrich, the only other fate marked in the council room besides the half-marked.
Roan hadn't said anything about what Shay and Eric had tried to do. If Lisbeth and Sir Dietrich suspected, they gave no indication, content to listen to Rhea's tirade.
"What are you going to do with her?"
Rhea demanded, when no one responded.
Grey tried to put a comforting arm around her shoulders, but she shrugged it off, her eyes burning into any who dared meet her gaze.
Falcon Hoser stood.
"She is imprisoned, awaiting trial," he said. "She is in Fanes. She will be dealt with according to our laws."
"She tried to murder us all. What need is there for a trial?"
Roan said, "Sister, calm yourself. There are circumstances you are not aware of. Justice will be served one way or another."
"What circumstances?"
Falcon and Roan shared a glance, and then Falcon said,
"She waited until the time of day when most of the inhabitants of the caves on that side of the canyon would be out conducting their daily business. And the fire root packets she'd set contained less than half of what they should have, if she was truly going to bring down the canyon walls. We found unused bags of powder in her quarters."
Rhea shook her head. "This is madness. We should be merciful to her because she wasn't going to blow things up as much as she could have."
"He didn't say that," Roan said. "We are simply considering all the facts."
Rhea breathed deeply, and Roan could tell she was trying to control her temper.
"That is good," he thought. "Maybe she has changed." When she finally spoke, her voice was lower, more controlled.
"I refuse to accept. I have something else to tell you," Shay said.
"Oh, gods."
Roan wanted to clamp his hands over her mouth, counsel her not to speak another word until Rhea had calmed down, but this was her secret to tell. Hers and Eric's.
"What?"
Rhea spat, annoyed at having been interrupted. "We tried to destroy the Fate Marked last night."
Rhea's jaw dropped open, closed, opened again.
There was murder in her eyes. Beside her, Grey was no less incredulous.
"Shay?"
was all he managed to get out.
"I'm sorry,"
she said.
"We thought it was the only way to stop the Horde. We thought it was the right thing. We didn't take such drastic action lightly."
"Spoken like a true martyr,"
Rhea said, finally finding her voice again.
"Tell me this. Why didn't you go through with it? Why is my daughter's heart still beating?"
Shay looked at Roan, and Rhea's gaze followed.
"Brother? Something to say?"
Roan sighed. This wasn't going to help matters, but there was nothing for it. Truth was the only weapon he had left. "I stopped them." Rhea's lip curled into a sneer.
"Let me get this straight. You stopped the Half-Marked from killing all the Fate-Marked, and still had time to rush out to save Shanti from killing herself?"
"It wasn't like that," Falcon said.
"You don't speak,"
Rhea said, aiming a finger at the Emperor.
"Yes," Roan confirmed. "I did. And that was after I sent Bane out for information."
"Oh, good. If Bane is helping, what could go wrong?"
"Rhea, I know you're angry."
"You think so? Brother, I know you are trying to save this world and be the peacemaker and all that rubbish, but you're surrounded by fools with their heads in the clouds, and I won't be a part of it any more. Leave me and my daughter out of your plans. Agreed?"
Roan knew he had no choice. He couldn't force her to cooperate.
"Agreed."
Rhea stood, pressing Nora's cheek to her chest, and stormed out.
"How could you?"
Grey said when she was gone. Shay said nothing, her head hanging. Eric said,
"We weighed all the options. We tried to take the emotion out of it. What are several lives against thousands? What are our lives, any of them? That was our child. Our daughter."
Shay was crying now.
"We didn't know what else to do."
Roan held up a hand. Things were spiraling, and if he didn't slow their course, all might be lost. These were good people making impossible decisions. They weren't communicating. That was the problem. All eyes fell on him.
"I would die 1,000 deaths to save the kingdoms," he started.
"Us too,"
Shay said, and Eric nodded.
"I know,"
Roan said softly.
"And Grey would surely die to protect his daughter."
"I would,"
Grey confirmed.
"But that's not what this is about. This is about choice. All these years of war have been about our rulers seeking power and vengeance. The soldiers forced to fight have had no choice. Thousands have died because of the decisions of a few. That's what this is all about. Even Bane gets that. I don't believe people are born to hate. Hate is something taught and learned and passed down from generation to generation like an heirloom. But you know what? Each generation has a choice. They can clutch that bloody heirloom to their chest, clinging to its precept, believing what it stands for. Or they can cast it in the fire along with all the hate. We have a choice too, whether to count on each other to come through or to give up. I'm not giving up. Are you?"
Grey said,
"No."
Lisbeth and Dietrich looked at each other and shook their heads in tandem. Shay took a deep breath and shook her head. Eric followed shortly thereafter.
"Then what do we do?"
he asked. Roan met each of their eyes.
"We fight. Even if the other kingdoms choose to sit back behind their borders and wait for the Horde to invade, we will not. We will ride out to meet them. We will defend the lives of the next generations, for this world is not ours, but theirs. It is the only gift we have left to give them. Our heirloom shall be peace."
Windy Sands, who had been sitting quietly and listening the entire time, finally spoke.
"I may only be a scholar, but I will fight. There comes a time when we all must fight."
These words coming from the scholar sent a chill through Roan from head to toe. 66. The Southern Empire, Fenir. Rhea Loren. Rhea felt ill as she watched her child sleep. She felt a sense of tenderness and love, too, but mostly nauseous.
I haven't changed, she thought.
Not really. She was still a selfish girl, but in the body of a woman. She still made choices based on what she wanted and not the greater good. She still felt angry sometimes, like when she looked in the mirror. She didn't want to feel that way, not anymore. She wanted to be a shining example for her sweet Noora, the motherly example she'd never had. When Rhea had first arrived back at her quarters, she'd laid her daughter down to sleep as gently as she could, though she was brimming with boiling anger. She'd thought dark thoughts of murder, of killing all who threatened her daughter's life, Shantipathena Lord forcing her to ingest her own fire-root powder and then lighting her like a candle-wick, Grey's sister, Shay, and her half-marked friend, stabbing them both through the heart, the Horde, all of them, dying beneath her sword, all dead in the name of Noora. Rhea had stormed from one side of the room to the other, resisting the urge to slam her fists against the walls, to break things. She'd ripped down several wall tapestries, however, and they now lay crumpled in the corner. Feathers were everywhere from the pillow she'd disemboweled. At one point, she'd picked up the small hand mirror, raising it high above her head. Memories had assaulted her. A broken girl, stripped of everything she thought was important to her. Jagged scars cut into the flesh of her face, glistening with healing and tears. Despair came first, but that girl hated feeling so weak, so broken, so she replaced that sorrow with anger. No, with rage, as cold as ice, as calculating as a viper intent on sinking its teeth into a hand and not letting go. Never letting go. The mirror had shattered so easily, and she knew her enemies would too. The shard was the perfect weapon, because none would notice or suspect one was missing as the mess was cleaned up. None would expect a scarred, shattered girl of being capable of murder. She was the underestimated one, and she relished that feeling of power and control. The memory had faded, and Rhea stared at herself in the mirror. The face of a stranger looked back at her. Time, tragedy, and trauma had aged her, darkening her eyes, giving them a hollowness born of experience. She'd blinked, having realized she didn't even see the scars anymore, or at least didn't notice them the way she used to, when they were all she saw. She could even see the beauty beneath them, around them, in spite of them. Finally, she'd seen what Grey still saw in her. She'd put down the mirror. Now she could not deny the fire inside her, but she could control it. She was wiser, more experienced. Her old tactics, murder, betrayal, subterfuge, were no longer the only weapons in her arsenal. But she also could not deny that her daughter was fate-marked.
No, she thought now. Peace-marked.
Whatever that meant. Watching her angelic child sleep, Rhea was torn between the need to protect her and the desire to atone for her many sins, to do something good and right in the cause for peace, a cause her brother had given his entire life to. Neither choice felt wholly right. When she'd been queen, she'd made every decision with certainty, with resolve, letting none, even her trusted adviser Ennis, sway her mind. Now, as a mother, she questioned every choice and the impact it would have on her daughter's life. But what if the sleeping babe she'd carried in her womb for months was the key to peace in the Four Kingdoms? What if the marking painted only by firelight on her skin could make the world a better place for her to grow up in? Rhea closed her eyes, resigned to the decision she'd just made. Not to kill or to plot, but to live, to protect. Ennis had already left, but that didn't mean she couldn't catch him. Her duty was first to her child, then to her kingdom, and last to the Four Kingdoms as a whole. She was going to bring Noora home, to Night's End, where she belonged. And she needed to go alone.
I'm sorry, Grey, she thought, as she began to pack her things.
In a swift reversal of the earlier excitement, the palace was now still and silent, the night falling over it like a blanket. Rhea's midwife hadn't come to check on her, for which she was glad. It had allowed her to gather her things in peace, without forcing the woman to keep yet another of her secrets. She didn't take much with her, just enough to complete the journey to the war cities north of the Bloody Canyons. She could resupply there, and then again once she was past the South Run gates. Though she would be travelling with her child on the outside of her body now, she wasn't afraid. She'd conquered armies, after all. Going home should be easy. She focused on keeping her footfalls light as she passed along the last corridor. Nora had balled her tiny fists and cried out when Rhea had picked her up, but then she'd gone right back to sleep, resting her cheek on her mother's shoulder. Soon she would wake up hungry, and Rhea wanted to be well away from the palace by then. The final archway came into view, and beyond, the shadowy darkness of the canyons.
"What am I doing?"
Rhea thought, not for the first time. But the answer was the same.
"What I must."
Yes, she was carrying her daughter closer toward the enemy, but only to protect her behind the impenetrable walls of Night's End. Led by Ennis, their armies would resist any siege, eventually driving the horde away. Hopefully by then the other kingdoms would be ready to join the cause. And if Nora had a part to play because of her peace mark, so be it. She redoubled her speed, but jolted to a stop as a form stepped across the exit. Rhea inhaled sharply, but then let the breath out just as quickly when she saw who it was.
"Brother," she said.
"Sister," Roan replied, an eyebrow raised. His eyes flitted from Nora to the pack strapped to her shoulders.
"Couldn't sleep." "I'm leaving," she said,
not wanting to dance around things. "I suspected as much."
"What?
You did?" Roan nodded. "Aye. You stormed out of the council, remember?"
"Do you blame me?"
"No," Roan said. "The sister I first met would have done far worse. Let's call it progress." Rhea couldn't help the laugh that escaped her lips.
"Look, I didn't have a chance to say thank you.
You saved my daughter's life." Roan nodded. "Shay and Eric thought they were doing the right thing. They were sacrificing themselves, too. Don't forget that."
"You're on their side."
Rhea felt her cheeks begin to warm. "I didn't say that. I stopped them, remember? They were wrong. They'd lost hope in all of us. But I haven't.
Everyone left us. All our potential allies. Even Gareth and Gwen. Shouldn't that tell you something?"
To her surprise, Roan only smiled.
"It tells me they are scared. It tells me that we're not quite there yet, but that won't stop me from hoping. The Four Kingdoms is worth hoping for. I have to believe that."
Rhea could see where this was going.
"You can't stop me. Nora might be marked, but that doesn't mean she's some magical solution to..."
"I know. That's not why I'm here."
She frowned, not understanding. Ever since she'd known Roan, he was determined to bring the Fate Marked together, to learn their purpose, to carry the weight of the kingdoms on his own back.
"Then why?"
Something sparkled in his eyes.
"Rhea, you're my sister, even if we've barely just met. I'm here to wish you off. I've arranged horses and a guard to accompany you."
Her heart bloomed just a little, but she hid her emotions behind an even tone.
"That's really not necessary."
"Yes, it is."
Roan stepped forward and Rhea tensed.
"What is wrong with me?"
He kissed her lightly on the cheek.
"Why am I running from my own brother?"
"And though I don't understand it, something tells me this is meant to be."
"Fated?"
Rhea quipped, feeling comforted by his words. Roan smiled.
"Yes, that's the perfect word. Be safe, my sister."
"May we meet again,"
she said.
"And Roan?"
"Yes?"
"Please tell Grey I'm sorry."
Roan shook his head.
"No."
Why not?"
"Because you can tell him yourself. He's standing right behind you."
Rhea froze.
"I'll give you some privacy. Farewell."
With that, he drifted through the archway and out of sight, leaving Rhea as still as a statue. For a moment, she considered running, but didn't want to disturb Nora's slumber.
"Rhea," Grey said, I'm sorry.
The apology practically burst from her lips, tears welling up just as quickly. She knew it wasn't a fair tactic to use, but it also wasn't a tactic. Not this time. No, Roan had brought her emotions so close to the surface there was no denying them.
Don't be. Not ever. I'm just trying to understand. Why didn't you tell me?
She conjured a dozen lies before she could blink, but discarded them just as quickly. Grey had been kind to her when she didn't deserve it, and he was the father to her daughter, a truth she could never reject. But that wasn't enough to stop her, and for that she was sorry.
"Because I didn't want to hurt you."
She shook her head. Even that was a lie, because she knew slipping away in secret would have crushed him.
"I didn't want to see you hurt," she clarified, admitting her own selfishness.
Finally, she turned around, and seeing him again sent a pang through her chest. He didn't look angry, not at all. Just disappointed. Which was worse. Far worse.
"Grey, I know," he said.
"But you don't understand. You don't understand at all." Something about the way he spoke gave her pause.
"Understand what?"
"I'm coming with you."
"Grey, you don't have to say that. You don't owe me anything. I'm not trying to force your hand, or make you beholden to me, or—"
He reached up to cup her chin. "Rhea," he said, and her mind went fuzzy, the rest of her thoughts lost forever.
"I love you. Nora, too. You are all I want. You are all I need. But your sister—"
A half-smile formed on Grey's lips.
"She doesn't need me any more, if she ever did. She is stronger than I ever gave her credit for."
Rhea's lips parted, but Grey continued before she could speak.
"I'm not saying what she tried to do was right, and I haven't forgiven her, not by a long shot. But I think I finally understand her, the turmoil she faces every day. Having so much power is a burden."
Rhea understood that as well as anyone. She nodded, but said nothing. Grey said, "And she has Eric now. They understand each other in the same way I want to understand you." They were beautiful words, and Rhea longed to cling to each one, to memorize them, to whisper them in the lonely hours of the night. But she could not.
"Thank you. But words used to be just words to me, Rhea. I used them to get what I wanted. But not any more. Now my words are promises. Promises I plan to keep. I will follow you and Nora to the ends of the earth and back again. I will descend into the burning fires of the first heaven and—"
Rhea cut off the rest of his promise with her lips, her passion like a fire of its own, and she could feel his soul pressed against hers in the same way their lips were. When they broke apart, she could tell he was as breathless as she.
"That's my promise," she said. "Now gather your things. We have a long journey ahead of us."
67. The Western Kingdom, the Bridge of Triumph. Helmuth Garrick. The clear night should have been bright, the sky glittering with moons and starlight. Instead, it was cloaked in thick, dark smoke. The forest known as the Tangle was burning. Helmuth knew it was unnecessary to his greater goals, but it still felt good. He wanted to burn the Four Kingdoms to the ground, turning it into a land of ash that would never be inhabited again. The Horde was watching, strong, pale bodies wreathed in shadows. Several of them fought over scraps of meat, but he didn't stop them. They were close now, and he wanted them to be angry. The only question was where to go next. If he crossed the bridge into the east, he would face what he believed was their toughest opponent, the Orions, while his force was still at its strongest. But an assault on Ironwood and the Iron City of Feria would take a toll on his numbers. And he would need numbers for the battle against the southern empires of Calip and Fanes. If he marched south now, he could take Fanes in one fell swoop, spend a few days in the canyons, resting and recovering. Two options, neither perfect, but both enticing. As he watched the fires burn, he didn't see the shadow appear behind him, knife flashing. Bane. He'd moved through the space between worlds perfectly, appearing in the Horde leader's blind spot. His aim was perfect, too, the blade plunging toward the back of the man's head. One thing he hadn't considered, however, the vigilance of the barbaric creatures scattered across the burning wasteland. The powerful humanoid beast came from nowhere, hammering into the side of him and changing the trajectory of the knife, which slashed across the man's shoulder as Bane fell. The sheer weight of the barbarian knocked the breath from his lungs, but his death mark was burning hotly and he recovered swiftly, bringing his dagger to bear, jamming it into the creature's unnaturally pale eye. Splattered in gore, Bane tried to roll away, but another barbarian was upon him, slamming a club into his arm. He felt his bones shatter, the pain like a white light in the dark of night, but he still managed to coil back and launch a powerful kick that rocketed the creature away, his club flying from his grip. He could hear them now, the snarls. More barbarians were on the way, and his only chance was to get the hell away and live to fight another. He gagged suddenly, the air thick and grey. He tried to wave his hand in front of his face to clear the smoke, but it wasn't smoke, the fog forming into finger-like tendrils that curled around his chin, probing into his mouth as he opened his lips in a silent scream. And then the pain. Like nothing he had ever experienced, an agony so complete he wouldn't wish it upon his worst enemies, except perhaps the very man who inflicted it on him now. The Horde leader stood over him, blood trickling from the flesh wound Bane had slashed into his shoulder.
"Do you feel it?"
he said as Bane writhed. He reached down and touched him, and everything got worse. Bane screamed and screamed and screamed until his throat was raw and the sound was empty of all but pain. Pain. The great equalizer.
68. The Southern Empire. The Bloody Canyons. Rhea Loren. Nura was awake, her eyes filled with starlight, staring up at Rhea, smiling occasionally, making sweet, gurgling baby noises. Rhea, however, found it hard to decide who to look at, for Grey's expression was filled with wonder at the beautiful countenance of their daughter. The scoundrel he'd once been had given way to the pure honesty of fatherhood.
"She's looking at you,"
Rhea said, as Nora's eyes shifted to look over Rhea's shoulder. They bounced along slowly through the night, the ride smoother than it might have been had the massive Phoenician horse not been so well trained on the craggy terrain. Now that Grey was coming with her, Rhea had decided to reject Roan's offer of a guard escort, preferring to travel with only her family.
"She's perfect," Grey said,
something he'd already said several times. Rhea didn't blame him for his lack of creativity. She was perfect, despite the two imperfect souls who had created her.
"Hopefully we don't screw her up,"
Rhea said, her thoughts taking voice. To her surprise, Grey laughed, though she hadn't intended it as a joke.
"You didn't murder my sister," he said,
"so that's something."
"You thought I would?"
"I thought I would," Grey said,
"or both of us.
Maybe."
"Will you ever speak to her again?"
It wasn't a challenge. Just an honest question.
"I don't know. I think so. Eventually. She's been through a lot. We all have. I've done more stupid things than I can count."
"Me too," Rhea had to admit, though she still felt the hot tip of anger in her chest any time she thought about what Shay and Eric had done, or tried to do. If Nura had died and she'd gone on living, she wasn't sure she could endure it. It's strange how everyone in Fenir seems to have the same good intentions, but none of them know what to do, Grey said.
"Maybe good intentions aren't enough,"
Rhea said, thinking of her time as Queen of the West. After all, she had wanted to protect her people and give them the world.
"True. Well, the only thing I intend to do is protect you and Nura. My family."
He relaxed his hands on the reins and pulled her tighter against his chest, squeezing. His lips brushed the nape of her neck, and she wanted to melt into him and escape to another world, a better one, safe for their daughter to grow up in. Nura smiled again, her head bobbing around as she learned the beauty of movement. She grasped her father's finger and squeezed.
"Whoa, she's got a strong grip," Gray said. Rhea loved hearing the wonder in his voice at such a simple thing.
"Life," she thought, "is made up of so many simple pleasures we take for granted. I take for granted."
She made a silent vow to enjoy each and every one from this point forward. The Bloody Canyons had seemed so far away when they started their journey, but now they loomed, a dark, shadowy place that conjured memories of violence and battle. Rhea shoved away the thought, because this place had also been a new beginning, a new opportunity, one they were already wasting. And for what? Petty differences? Man-made boundary lines that separated kingdoms from empires? Different beliefs, different gods, different cultures and foods and ideals and... Rhea shook her head.
"What are you thinking?" Gray said, his breath tickling her ear. "Why are we leaving?"
I'm leaving because you're leaving.
Not good enough. Are we running away? Are we being selfish?
Wanting to protect one's family is never selfish.
I agree, but the Horde is somewhere north, and that's the direction we're heading.
Rhea was fairly certain the barbarians hadn't made their way to the west yet, not if they were pursuing an east toward Darin. At worst, they were swarming over the Mournful Mountains and into the east.
But still. "You want to bring her home. Our people are there. We can protect her behind the walls of Night's End."
The earnestness in Gray's tone would be so easy to accept. Only Rhea had never taken the easy route. Tears slipped from her eyes before she was even aware that they were there.
"Oh, Roth, what am I thinking? I can't go back. Can't bring Nora back to the chaos. I can. I must. Oh, Roth." "Nora is peacemarked," Rhea said.
I know. You told us. But that doesn't have to change anything. She's just a baby."
"And your sister?"
Gray paused before answering this time. She could feel the tension in his arms, in his fingers, one of which was still gripped tightly by Nora, who'd fallen asleep again.
"She is wise beyond her years. A woman trapped in a child's body."
His voice was tremulous, a quivering raindrop clinging to a leaf.
"Gray."
His body was shaking now, racked with silent sobs. She felt his tears dripping on her skin, soaking through her dress. Cradling Nora in one arm, Rhea peeled the reins from his fingers, drawing the horse to a halt. The night was still and silent, frozen, like time had stopped, and the world wouldn't start moving again until they were ready for it. She suspected what he was feeling, the mistakes of his past piling up around him, threatening to bury him alive. She could relate to the fear she felt in him, too. The fear of repeating those same mistakes again and again, until he destroyed everything around him. She felt the same every day. For him, she knew, he was haunted by how he'd failed his sister. How he thought he'd failed her.
"Gray, you didn't know."
"I should have."
"You couldn't."
"What about now? What do I know now?"
"Nothing, that's what. Even after everything, I don't know up from down, right from wrong."
"You do. So do I. Though we're both running from it. At least we're doing it together this time. At least."
Still and silent. Deep breaths and hearts beating. A perfect child asleep under the stars. They spoke at the same time.
"We should go back."
Rhea's eyes closed, weighed down by the truth of their words. Gray said,
"We can't run. Not anymore. We can protect Nora. But we can't deny her role in all this, just as I can't deny my sister's role. Perhaps if I hadn't been so distracted. Gray, Shay has to make her own decisions, just as we do. And like you said, she had good intentions."
"You forgive her?"
Rhea shook her head.
"Not yet. But maybe I can. Someday. Just like you."
Before Gray could respond, movement grabbed Rhea's attention. A shadow against shadows, slightly darker than the rest, taking form just ahead, separating itself from the inky darkness of the bloody canyons. A horse. Grey had seen it too, his body stiffening against hers. "Is it?" he started to say. Rhea had been thinking the same thing she thought Grey was. "It's riderless." But then she noticed a hump on its back. Maybe two humps. Bags strapped to it? Or people? She couldn't tell from this distance. The horse was moving slowly right toward them, its head hanging toward the ground as if it was infinitely weary. Closer, closer. Rhea recognized the breed, a chestnut mare well known in the West. Her heart stopped at the same moment the horse did. It faltered, its strength giving way as it dropped onto its forelegs. Foamy spittle bearded its mouth and chin. This close, she could see the truth. Two bodies clinging to its back, tethered by ropes pulled tight around the horse's chest. One small, one large. The horse toppled over onto its side, and one of the forms groaned, a deep tone of agony that almost certainly came from the larger of the two. The other form was silent, too silent. Grey said, "We should help them." Rhea knew he was right, but she also feared some sort of a trap. "Be careful. I'll stay here with Noora." Grey dismounted, glancing back at her. "If anything happens, ride back. Get help." She nodded, watching him approach the fallen horse and riders. "Who are you?" he said loudly. Another groan, a failed attempt at words, the gibberish of either a very good actor or someone in distress, dehydrated and exhausted and malnourished. Grey eased in closer, wary. "By the gods," he murmured. "Grey, what is it?" Rhea asked, feeling goose flesh rise on her arms. Grey looked back once more, his eyes wide with shock. "It's your cousin," he said. "Ennis." Part 4. Nymphs. Bane. Rhea. Rhone. Anis. Terin. Christoph. Gwen. Gareth. Whisper. Falcon. Sonica. Grey. Lisbeth. "Fire is as beautiful as it is deadly. Those who seek to tame it will find themselves burned." Empress Fire Sands. Deceased. 69. The Nymph Kingdom, the Tangle. Those Who Slept. The heat came in waves, enough to make the sisters stir, but not awaken. Why wake up when their beds of moss and leaves were so comfortable? Their sisters' arrogance, if anything, had done them all a favour. And anyway, Felicity had paid the price, hadn't she? She'd taken on an Orion and lost, had her locket of souls stolen from her. Smashed beyond repair. Felicity, the queen of the wood nymphs, was dying, they knew. But they didn't think about it much. Not when their dreams were so beautiful and bright. Especially not then. Because they knew she'd killed their mother, Dressara, claiming the forest for herself. "What of our lockets?" they sometimes wondered. But the thoughts were fleeting at best, and they quickly shoved them away. Again they stirred, the heat growing more intense. "It must be a sunny day," they thought. "Beautiful and serene, with birds chirping in the wood, creatures scurrying through the undergrowth, leaves rustling under the breath of a gentle breeze." One of them, Kolya, awoke, a gasp bursting from her blueberry-purple lips. The heat was all around her now, and she could see the flames, tongues of orange and red crackling at her bed and the beds of her sisters. She squealed as she realized her fern-like hair was on fire. Water from the purest stream in the forest, untouched by human hands or sweat, was nearby in a clay pot. She grabbed it and dumped it over her head, feeling the cool relief even as she felt hot panic rise through her. She screamed for her two sisters to wake up, but they only rolled over on the moss, murmuring about beauty and tranquility, dream worlds that were suddenly so far from reality Kolya couldn't fathom how they'd ever cherished them so much. "Wake up!" she screamed again, stamping at the flames as she grabbed one of her sister's arms to rouse her. Lena's dark eyes flashed open, ringed by thorns that protruded from her rough, bark-like skin. several emotions rolling over her expression as she realized the same thing Kolya had. They were in mortal danger, their long, peaceful lives threatened by something far worse than their dying sister, or the Orion who had destroyed her locket and now controlled theirs. Together, they dragged their other sister, May, to her feet, slapping her into awareness. Her cheeks were as green as the nettles of the evergreens that grew in the northern part of the forest. Her hair hung like woolly vines from the mighty banyan tree. One tendril was afire, and May shrieked as Kolya grabbed it and dipped it into what moisture was left in the clay pot. And then they ran, the forest obeying them as they opened a path to safety. Kolya and her sisters were gentle nymphs, something their eldest sister had always mocked them for. They wanted nothing more than to live in peace and harmony, avoiding the foolhardy wars of humans and their ilk. But now, something had disturbed the forest. Someone. This fire was no accident. Without their lockets, however, they were chained to the forest with no hope of escape. They needed to contact the Orion. And Kolya knew only one way to do that. Their dying sister, Felicity. Xur. In the hinterlands, Xur was reading the stars, and he didn't like what he saw. Slowly, he pushed to his feet, walked back toward the village, ice crunching under his heavy trod. It was time. He only hoped they weren't too late. As the first of the ice block structures came into view, he wondered why he had ever thought isolation was the key to safety and happiness. Year after year they'd sacrificed their own people to the great god of the lake. Yes, they only chose those who were afflicted with mortal disease, but still. He would have given anything for even just one more day with his daughter. His brave, beautiful daughter. He realized he'd stopped before the dark hall of war, now empty of the frozen knights that had once slumbered there until Lisbeth Lorne had disturbed them. She'd changed the lives of the Ghazi forever, and yet here they were, pretending like everything was the same it always had been. He reached down and pulled the horn from his belt, raised it to his lips, blew a single note, clear and long. His soldiers came, but not only. All the villagers streamed from their huts, dragged from sleep by his call to arms. Females, males, children, elderly, infirm. The old crone emerged from her hut, cutting a direct line toward him. She was a tough old woman, he had to admit. And she had seen what he had not, understanding things he was only just beginning to wrap his mind around.
"Is it time?"
she asked in the common tongue, surprising him.
"Yes," he responded in kind. "Lisbeth, she spoke to me, too, while I slept. She needs us again."
Xur nodded, turned away, faced those gathered before him.
"Tonight we rest, for tomorrow we march to war," he said.
Frowns, ugly stares, angry stares.
"Why?"
one said, and he understood the question, for it was one he would have asked not long ago.
"What enemy has broken the pact? Our lands are free again, ours. None disturb us since they stole the frozen army." "The pact is no longer relevant," Xur said, "if it ever was. Too long have we relied on it to protect us, when we are capable of protecting ourselves. We must fight. We must rain down death on a new enemy, one that has come to these lands to destroy us all."
"How do you know this?"
someone shouted.
"The blue-eyed woman," he admitted. "Lisbeth Lorne.
She hurt us. She stole from us. You would trust her?"
"Not before. But now," Xur said. "I was a fool. I didn't see. But now I do. Now I do. And you can, too. Open your minds as you sleep on this night, and she will show you what she has shown me."
They shook their heads. Some departed swiftly, while others watched him for a while, their stares darkening with each passing second. Eventually, however, they went too, leaving only Crone in his company.
"Will it work?"
he asked her.
"Perhaps,"
she said.
"But either way, I will march with you. And I will fight."
70. The Eastern Kingdom, Portage. Bane Garrick. Bane clenched his fist tight and concentrated, pushing every thought into his scalp, into his death mark, straining to bring it to life. If he could generate a single spark of heat, perhaps he could escape to that place between shadows. Breath exploded from his lips.